I'm Katie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Thank you so much for speaking, Jordan. You were awesome. I would have peed my pants if someone asked me to speak 5 months sober, so that was wonderful. And, I am also very nervous, so I'm just going to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So, okay. My sobriety date is January 11, 2011. And I have a sponsor, and I sponsor other people. And I have a home group, and it is the, I swear I have a home group. No, it's the Friday night step study at the Watermark Church. So it meets at 8 o'clock p.m. on Fridays, and it's a great little meeting. And those were all things that people told me to do when I first came to AA. They told me that those were some of the things that basically they had done, and that's what kept them sober, getting a sponsor and getting a home group and doing other things as well, but those were some of them. So anyways, I was born in Detroit, and I have a wonderful mother and father, and I also have a little brother and sister, and they are my favorite people in the whole world. And when I was drinking, I was not really a part of their lives. I was basically the whatever that saying is with the tornado that runs, you know, through people's lives. So I was just always extremely selfish, self-centered. I had always done something to piss someone off or get in trouble or ruined the Thanksgiving dinner or my sister's birthday. I would show up intoxicated and just basically make everything all about me. And that was basically the family dynamic. It was just like, what's wrong with Katie now? You know, what's Katie done now? And I never really, like, cared to get to know the members of my family. Like, I knew them because they were my family, but I just, honestly, it just never really crossed my mind that I should, you know, try to be a big sister to my brother and sister, or to, you know, show up for my parents and be appreciative of everything that they had done for me. And that has definitely been the greatest gift of me getting sober and being in Alcoholics Anonymous, is that I'm able to be there for my family and have relationships with those people, and it's just wonderful. So, anyways, so born in Detroit, and then we moved around a lot. My dad was very career-oriented, and he just kept getting new jobs, so we just moved all around, and so I was never in one place very long, and I kind of always had that, like, new kid nervousness about me, I guess, just always, you know, not feeling like I'm fitting in. Because I was also, like, very quirky, I guess, and, yeah, I mean, it was rough in my mind. It was really rough, but it really wasn't rough. I mean, I had everything that I ever needed, you know, but I was selfish from a very young age. I used to get very upset when my mother would tell me that I was selfish, but I was, and everything was about me and about the way I felt, and if I didn't like the way I felt, then I was gonna cause a scene or whatever. So I don't know, but anyway, so we ended up we moved to Cincinnati after a while, and we stayed there, so I kind of grew up there, and I started, you know, school and making friends, and I was very shy at first, but after the initial shyness, I'm very sociable and I like people, and so I made a lot of friends, and it was fun, and, you know, things were going good, things are going well. And my dad is an alcoholic as well. And another wonderful thing about AA, and I hear people say this all the time, but it is so true, is that AA has helped me to not really place, like, I swear, like, the first time I heard someone say this when I was brand new, it was like the judgment and the anger, like the majority of it, at least towards my father, just for being an alcoholic, was like vanished, you know, because someone was like, well, haven't you ever thought that, like, maybe he was doing the best he could with what he had? And, like, it just made so much sense, because he's just like me, you know, so I don't know what I would have done if I were him. So there's really, I mean, that was pretty wonderful. But so my dad is an alcoholic, and, you know, he was crazy. I mean, he was a crazy guy. But he was a wonderful, loving father, but he definitely, you know, he would scare me with his drinking when I was a kid. I would just not want to be like him. Like, I could totally relate to what Jordan was saying. Like, I was just, like, swore off alcohol. I'm like, I am never going to drink. I wrote my mom this letter in, like, the third grade, and she, like, never talked to me about the letter. So it was just really awkward. But I, like, wrote her a letter about how I never wanted to drink and blah, blah, blah. I, like, left it on her pillow and or whatever. I gave it to her somehow. And she, like, never mentioned it. So I just always had a resentment against her because of that. But I don't know. It was just, yeah, I don't know. I just thought I would, I just didn't want to be like my dad, you know. I just did not want to drink. And, you know, when I got into middle school, not so much middle school because I was in, like, the Midwest, and at least in the town I was in, I was pretty sheltered up there. But no one was really partying too hard in middle school. But once I got to high school, people started drinking, and I was, like, dating this older guy, and he would drink, and I would be like, oh, no, I'm not going to be a part of that, which is just hilarious, like, after what happened after that. It's just so funny that I was like that, and I judged everybody for drinking, and it was just, like, this ongoing thing in my mind, like, oh, alcohol is so bad, I can't believe they're doing that, like, they're going to ruin their futures. I don't know. It was just weird. But eventually I moved to Tampa, and I was really upset about that. I thought I had, like, the life up in Cincinnati, but I, you know, I moved to Tampa. Dad got a new job, so we moved down here when I was in high school, and it was a little bit of a culture shock. I don't know. I just feel like moving to any new place, I guess, is a little bit of a culture shock, but I didn't deal with it well. I don't really deal with things well. I've always had that about me. You know, I don't deal with change well. I don't deal with emotions well. I just don't deal with any of that well when I am not, you know, when I don't have a higher power in my life and I don't have friends that I'm honest with or someone to guide me through life. Like, I just can't really do it. So I was very miserable, and basically I spent a few months down here, like, really, 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 really miserable. And I wasn't, like, trying to make friends. It was like that thing where, like, I'm upset that I don't have friends, but I'm not trying to make friends. And I just expect everyone to just, everything to just come to me. You know, like, I don't want to have to do any work or anything. So I was at this Catholic high school. I grew up Catholic, went to church every Sunday, but with my, I mean, love my parents. This is no, it was more like they went to church every Sunday and they took the kids, but they went to church because it was like, you looked good if you went to church. That's really my only impression of religion from, it's just like, oh, that's what you do because all the neighbors go to church as well, you know? I didn't really have any sense of spirituality or connection with God. I would pray, like, this laundry list of prayers every night, though, because I was really scared all the time, and it would be like, God, please don't let there be a hurricane. God, please don't let there be a tornado. God, please don't let someone break into my house. Like, I was always really worried about those types of things. So that, I did utilize God for that. So that was my relationship with God. But anyway, so I went to this Catholic high school. Long story short, I just decided one day, I was like, screw this, you know, I'm just going to drink. You know I have all these morals and all these things that I said that I wasn't going to do, but I'm really miserable. All the kids down here drink. I can't seem to make friends with the people I want to make friends with because I'm not getting drunk with them. So I, like, made this big thing, and I was like, hey, guys, I'm getting drunk tonight. Coming out with you. And that, like, it was, so it was these girls on my volleyball team, and we had, like, a tournament the next day, and we got really drunk. I got really drunk. I'm not exactly sure how drunk they got, but I just took, like, one shot after another, and it was no, like, you know, one drink or two drinks. I mean, they weren't really drinking one drink or two drinks either, but it just blows my mind that people today just drink one drink or two drinks. But it was always like, no, I want to get drunk. That is the point of drinking, so you get wasted and you black out and you can't feel anything and nobody can hurt you. So I got drunk and, yeah, I, like, puked, I think. It was like, it wasn't like a total blackout. It was like a little brownout action going on. And I got sick, and I woke up the next day, and I was really hungover. I had to go play this volleyball tournament for, like, 12 hours. But, you know, it was like, immediately I felt that, of course I didn't know it at the time, but I felt, like, the obsession, because I was just like, when can we do that again? That was so awesome. You know, it's hard being 15 and getting drunk because you're not 21, and I didn't have a fake ID, and only certain kids had older brothers that could get us booze, and it was just, it was hard, so there's a lot of planning involved in drinking when you're in high school. So, anyways, I started drinking immediately, you know, every weekend. The kids from school, I was happy now because I had friends. I was, like, in the cool crowd. Just things were really starting to look up for my life in Tampa. And then I started, I know this is AA, and I 100% am going to try to stick to the primary purpose because I think that's really important. And there's a few parts of my story that involve other substances, and this is one of them. I got expelled from the school I was at because I was selling magic brownies, and so I got expelled from school. That was a pretty big consequence, you know, like, it was just terrible. I was upset, but at the same time, I didn't care. You know, I was, like, upset that my parents were mad at me and they were going to ground me for 3 months and give me a drug test. Like, that's why I was upset. You know, I knew that, like, the school, like, they let me withdraw instead of completely expelling me, so I knew it wasn't going to affect me getting into college or anything. So, you know, who cares about, like, the people around me that I'm hurting, like my parents or whatever. It was just, I was upset because I was grounded. So that happened, and I went to the public school, and then things just got really out of control. You know, I just immediately sought out the people that were just like me. And it's funny that we can do that, and I hear about this in AA, and I think it's really funny because when I was drinking, like when things started to get bad, I always had these things like, oh, I just need to move away. I just need to get away from the people I'm hanging out with. It's all their fault. But then I come to AA and they're like, no, like everywhere you go, there you are. Like, so that's exactly what happened. Like, I left that group of crazy partying friends and I just immediately found another one. So I was doing really well in school. I'm like naturally like weird and I have OCD a little bit. So I do good in school. Like, obsessive studying, that was always my thing. So I, like, kept my grades up, and a big thing of it, too, which is, you know, if I kept my grades up, then my parents wouldn't question me, you know, or ground me or get me in trouble, and then it gave me the freedom to do whatever I wanted to do. So I was keeping my grades up. I'm at this new school. Start having some really pretty serious consequences then. I had this one day where I was drinking heavily the night before, and I woke up the next day. I woke up like 3 hours late. I was out until like 5, and then I woke up at like 11, which never really happened because my mom would always like make me go to school, but I guess she had an appointment or something that morning. So anyways, I wake up at 11. I get in my car. I'm still intoxicated from the night before. I drive to school, and I rear-end the car on the way to school, and then I don't remember that one bit. I don't remember being at school, but I guess I left early, and then drove home, and on the way home, I kind of remember this, like, I thought a car was coming in my lane, but I guess they weren't. That's what she said anyways. There was I don't know if there was a trial or anything, but there was a hearing in the lab, that's what the lady said. So, she said she wasn't coming in my lane, but I thought she was, so I, like, swerved in the other lane, and my car, like, ran off the road and hit a pole, and I, like, passed out for a minute, and I woke up, and the paramedics were there, and it was so weird. The assistant principal was like on his afternoon jog, which doesn't even make sense because I thought I left school early, but he was there. Like, he was there. But God really, you know, had my back that day. I wore my seatbelt and I was fine. I just like passed out again though, and I woke up in the hospital, and my mom was like, yeah, we gave you a test for all these different things and you're in really big trouble. And that was like a month before my graduation, you know, and I just pissed my parents off again and disappointed them, and I just was like that angsty teen, and I was like, why can't you just let me have fun, you know, this is what all the kids are doing. My mom's like, no, not all the kids are getting in 2 car accidents in one day and wrecking their cars, and people aren't doing that, like, stop saying that. But and then before that, I was just thinking about this the other day. It's just really horrifying that I did this. Oh my God, this other car accident thing. I drove my little brother to school, and it was the same situation where I had been drinking the night before and I was still intoxicated in the morning. I fell asleep with my little brother in the car and hit the car in front of me. And I was just thinking about that the other day. I just almost started crying because that is so horrifying. And sometimes my little brother doesn't talk to me and I get really paranoid and I'm just like, oh God, maybe he's still like mad at me for this or mad at me for that. I don't know. But that was what was happening, so I was remembering that. But anyway, so I graduated high school. had one of those real winter boyfriends in my life, and he was like, no, don't go to those colleges that you want to go to. Just stay at the college here in Tampa so that we can stay together. And I was like, all right, whatever. So I went to the college here at USF, and my drinking patterns at this point were starting to get pretty severe, and I was starting to notice it. I had a friend right after that whole car accident thing. He OD'd, and he died. And that was like a kind of like a little bit of a moment of clarity for me, like, oh my God, I'm like doing the same things that guy is doing and, you know, drinking the way he's drinking, and he died, and no one thought that he would die because he was like, what? I don't know. And I just felt like, even in that moment, like when I was delusional about everything that I was doing, I had this moment where I was like, wow, like a normal person would stop doing these things right now, but I'm not going to do that. Like, I don't really even have a desire to do that. It's just kind of like thinking that I was immune from danger. It was really just delusional is all it was. Just absolutely delusional and not willing to look at my behaviors and change anything about myself then. So when I went to college, my drinking behaviors just got worse, and I was starting to have some really bad issues with other things too, and so that was just like, that was when my life became all about the getting whatever it was and drinking and using and then being messed up and then finding ways and means to get more. And that's like all it was. Every single person that I met, like that I hung out with, it was like to use them to get what I wanted. And it was just extremely selfish. And for example, so I had this fake ID. And I was in the dorm room, and I was like the only one on the floor with a fake ID. So I didn't have a car, and the liquor store was like a mile and a half, which was really far from me. And so they would pay me to go with my fake ID and buy them liquor, and then they would like I would like convince them that I also needed to drink it with them, even though these kids in the dorm didn't really like me because I was like always really loud and obnoxious. But so basically I had my own little way to get my liquor through other people, and then I didn't really make any friends in that dorm. It was like I reached this point in my life where I was no longer like, people didn't really like to be around me. I always had like one friend, like another person was just as crazy as I was. And so I don't know. So anyways, I'm in college and I'm doing really bad my first year. I had the Bright Futures scholarship, and then I lost part of it because I got a really bad GPA, and that was like the first time I had been doing bad in school. So, you know, I didn't ever think like, oh, you know, maybe I should stop drinking. Maybe I should just, you know, stop partying during the week and not showing up to class. It was like, no, my major's too hard. I'm just going to change it to something else, you know, something that other people are saying that's easier. So that's what I did, and then I like figured out how to get into like the rhythm of partying yet still going to class and getting pretty good grades. So it's like one little bump in the road for me. And that was like another big thing too, because as long as I was getting good grades and my parents weren't asking me questions, they were financially supporting me at that point. So, you know, I couldn't lose that, you know, because then I would either have to move home or be homeless, and I wasn't really willing to do either of those two things. So it was like I have to keep up my outward appearances so that everybody thinks that I'm okay. And you know, I was pretty good at doing that, but this started to get really scary. Like, you know, I could not really leave my house or my apartment or my dorm room or whatever during these years of my life if I did not have some sort of substance in my body. Like, I was scared of like the world. Like, I could not go to class. I always was just obsessing about, you know, when is it going to run out and how am I going to get more before I have to leave again and can someone come over and someone, you know, just this crazy madness that my freaking life had become. It was really, really scary. And then during this time I started working at a gentleman's club because I had gotten arrested a few times, and I got arrested really for a felony one time in Alabama. And someone told me earlier not to tell this story, but this guy before the meeting was like, oh, I don't want to hear about Alabama again. But anyways, my Alabama story, not really that great of a story either, but basically I got arrested in Alabama, and then the day I came back, I was visiting a friend there, and then the day I came back, like, I'd gotten arrested, with this guy, and he had gotten arrested in Tampa before. This was my ex-boyfriend. And so he was like, well, I have some money at the Hillsborough County Jail. I guess if you get arrested and then you get bailed out, so I don't really know the specifics of it, you can get that money back if you show up to court or something like that. So he told me that, and so I go to get the money, and I got the money, but I was driving my friend's car, and I stopped to have a drink before I went over to get the damn money, and I totaled her car on I-4 in the rain. So then I was so screwed, and instead of being, you know, like, oh shit, I really need to ask for help, and I have no idea what time I'm supposed to stop. I'm trying to figure this out right now. 8:45 is the end? Okay. So, yeah, I could not ask for help. I couldn't admit, you know, to my parents or anyone what I'd done. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to go, you know, work at this club and make some money and things will be good. But that is, you know, I was already doing pretty bad before, and then I started doing really, really, really bad. Because then all my, you know, my self-esteem and, like, all motives just out the door. You know, it's like doing everything so I can get that next drink or that next whatever, you know. And that was it. And I would go to school. I didn't really have friends anymore, like, at all. I had one friend, but even she didn't really like hanging out with me. And I would just go work at the club, and then I would come home the next day, and I'd have to study. So I would stay up in my room and study and then go take a test. And it was just, like, really, really lonely. And during this, it was just terrible. And so I knew that there was something wrong with me. I mean, clearly there was something wrong with what I was doing. So I started, like, my series of attempts to stop on my own. And the first thing I did was I went and saw a psychiatrist. He gave me these pills. And he told me, you know, take this, and then if you drink or if you do other substances while you take this, you'll either get sick or it won't work. Like, you'll get sick if you drink, and the other substances won't work. And I was like, okay. So I, like, tested it out one time, and he was absolutely right, and it was terrible, and so I never took that again. And I just, like, that was a bad idea. Wasted all that money getting that prescription filled. That was really stupid. So, yeah, the psychiatry thing, that didn't work. So then I moved in with this new girl, this new roommate that I had. This one, well, before I moved in with that roommate, anyways, no. So, I'm sorry. Yeah, I moved in with this new roommate, and she, like, went to church every Sunday, and I would always be up so late, and, like, she'd always be like, oh, you want to go to church with me in the morning? And I would be like, yeah. Like, every Saturday night she said that, and then I would never go to church. And then I would just feel like shit all day for not going to church, and, it was just really sad. But I don't know where I'm going with that. But anyways, it was like my little attempt, like my thinking that I'm having an attempt at having a relationship with God, but I really wasn't. So, yeah. So I just kept doing what I was doing, and then I would just, it was just that thing where I always, it was like the Big Book says. I don't know where the Big Book says it, but I know it says it somewhere. But I just could not believe. It would be like, I would wake up in the morning, I'd be like, I am not going to drink today. I am not going to drink today. And then I just could not believe, like, 10 hours later that I was drunk. Like, it was just like that crazy, crazy thing. Like, I would be so 100% positive that, like, I was going to do it today, you know? And it was just such a emotional roller coaster, too, because I would just go back and forth between hating myself for not being able to stay sober and then just being, like, I would just, like, snap, and then I'd just be in total denial again. Like, oh, no, I don't need to try to stop drinking. That's crazy. No one needs to do that. Like, I'm fine. I'm just going to keep going, you know, doing what I'm doing. And it was just crazy. And I just kind of resigned myself to, like, okay, this is how my life is going to be. And I would go through periods of desperation where, like, I would get, like, almost to the point of asking someone for help. And one time I actually went to an AA meeting on campus at USF. And it was a women's meeting, and I had no idea anything about AA. My dad, like I said, was an alcoholic. He was drinking at this time, and he was like, go to AA for like a little bit, and then he would relapse, and then go to AA for a little bit and relapse. So I like knew that like AA is where people go that try to stop drinking. So I looked up a meeting. Oh, also, and there was this guy I used to drink with, and oh my God, this is crazy. He would tell me about this meeting. He would be like, yeah, there's like this meeting that I went to one time, and there's like all these young people, like you wouldn't believe it, they're all just like us, and they're so cool, and we should go there sometime. And I'd always be like, yeah, that sounds great. But I never came here. But I went to the meeting on campus, and I thought the women were all so nice. I had no idea what was going on at the meeting, though. I was really confused by the chips. I didn't realize that, like, I didn't realize that everyone was counting the number of days in a row that they stayed sober. I thought it was just, like, a support group for people that, like, wanted to stop drinking for a little bit or, you know, stop drinking all the time. Like, I didn't realize it was, like, a 100% sobriety thing, so when I figured that out, I was like, that is not for me. What if I just want to take a break for a day? Those people are crazy. I don't know why they're so hard on themselves. Like, I just didn't get it. So, did not go back to an AA meeting after that. But, anyways, just a long, boring story that I'm sure a lot of people can relate to about how I kept trying to quit, and I couldn't. And I just kept, like, getting really depressed. And it came to be, it was like, the last semester before I was going to graduate from college, and I'm not even really sure what happened or why it happened. It was this long thing about I got caught on New Year's Eve by my boyfriend at the time for doing something that I said I hadn't been doing anymore. I had been lying to him about it for months. It was, I had this real good, like, the double life thing, you know, going on. Like, I really had that going on, like I'm sure a lot of other people did, but I thought I was really good at it. But, like, so I get caught doing something I said I wasn't, I told him I wasn't doing this one substance anymore, and then he catches me doing it, and he's like, yeah, I knew the whole time that you were doing this. And I was like, what? But he's like, I didn't want to say anything to you. Anyway, so he catches me doing that, he gives me, like, an ultimatum, and I just totally cut myself off from alcohol, from everything, for like 7 days. It was the longest I had ever gone. And I would, like, journal about it every day. I'd be like, I'm on day four. This is amazing. I feel great. I don't need anything. I'm so happy. I'm a beautiful woman. Like, all this shit. And then on the seventh day, my friend calls me and was like, hey, you want to go to this place and have a drink with me? And I was just like, not even a thought in my head. I was like, yeah, come pick me up. I'm at work right now, but I can leave. And she was like, all right. And then, like, I go and I have a drink with this girl, and I'm like, I cannot believe that I did that. Like, I said I wasn't going to do that. I can't believe I did it. And it was just, like, that hopelessness again. Like, man, I messed it up again. I can't believe that I did this. And the next day, it was, like, Christmas break or something, so I was staying at my parents' house, and my parents made me see a therapist because I had, like, confessed to them a few times over the years that I was having problems, and so my dad was taking me to therapy, and we were in the car, and I don't even remember what he said to me, but he said something to me about graduating from college and, like, becoming, like, a woman or some shit, and I was just like, it just made me so sad. Like, I just had this moment where I was like, what if this isn't just a phase? Because that's what I always told myself, like, you know, you'll clear your shit up, you know, you'll be fine after college, whatever. Everybody grows up. I just had this moment where I was like, what if, I don't really think that's going to happen. Like, I really don't think that's going to happen. Like, I have tried to quit, like, 20 times, and I have not been able to. So I'm a little scared right now. And so I'm on my way to this therapist, and this poor lady, and, like, I've seen her since I've been sober, and it's just been amazing. But, like, I would just go into her office every, like, other week, and I would just straight up lie to her, and she knew it. She would always try to tell me she knew I was lying, and I'd be like, I'm not lying. I swear I'm not lying. It's different this time. And so I went in there, and, like, for once, I, like, on my own, told the truth. And I do not know where that came from. It had to be some sort of divine intervention, and that's what I like to think of it today, because it's really what it was. Because as soon as it was like it wasn't even me saying it. Like, I just spilled every single thing that I had been doing, you know, everything that I've been doing. And as soon as I said it, I was like, oh my God, I shouldn't have said that. Because immediately she was like, all right, well, I know a treatment center. Let's call them and you can go. Call your dad and tell him to come in here. I was like, oh no, I didn't mean that, you know. But I just did it anyways. I just, like, bit my tongue for some reason. There was, like, something pushing me to do that. So I did. And we called the treatment center and they were able to get me in a few days later. And I had, like, a few days before that I was, like, partying. It was really weird because I was, like, excited to get sober, but I was, like, excited to get sober while I was extremely intoxicated. And I would, like, be with my friends who, like, I would just be like, yeah, I'm going to rehab and it's going to be so great. And they were like, that's so good. You need to go. And maybe, you know, maybe we should go too. I had this one friend. He had just gotten arrested for like some serious like grand theft at Macy's or something. I was like, you should just come with me. That'll look really, really good in front of the judge, you know, that you went. And so he was thinking about going too, but he didn't. But yeah, so I went to treatment and it was really sad. Like when I got there, it took like a really long time for my insurance to process, and it was just me and my mom in the waiting room. And you know, it was just like it all kind of hit me, I guess. So my mom was crying. Like we just sat there forever, and like we were both just like annoyed. And then like it was like finally time for me to go, and they were like, "All right, come on in now." And like my mom just looked at me, and she just started crying. And I just started crying, and I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe that, like, my mom has to go through this right now. It's, like, crazy, like a revelation. Like, she hadn't been going through it the whole time, you know? But I just, like, finally realized that. And so, I don't know. It was very sad. And when I went into treatment, I kind of just was, like, I really wanted to change my life. Like, I wanted to not feel the way I was feeling anymore. I wanted to think that I had some sort of future something in my life. I just didn't want to live the way I was living anymore, and I was desperate. And so basically every single thing they said in treatment sounded really good. And one of the first things I heard was like, you know, like, what do you have to lose? Like, why don't you just try doing what these people are doing and like see what happens? Like, you're just in rehab, like you can always leave, but or you can always just go back to whatever you were doing when you leave. And I was like, oh, that really makes sense, you know. So I just kind of right off the bat started doing what the therapists were suggesting, and then, like, they took us to AA meetings, and I started talking to people there. The first AA meeting I went to when I was in treatment, I saw my friend who I had gone to high school with, one of the girls I got in trouble with with the brownies, and she actually got expelled for that too, and it wasn't even her fault. And so I hadn't seen her since then, but I saw her at the meeting, and she picked up like a 4-year medallion, and it was like another like weird spiritual moment where I was like, oh my God, if this girl can do it, like I can too. And it was just, it was very cool. And so I got a sponsor, and I started calling my sponsor every day, and I started calling other women, and I started being honest with people about what I had been doing and how I had been feeling. And it was extremely uncomfortable and it was extremely hard. And every time I did it, I felt like a little bit better after I did, you know. And so I kept doing it. And this was my first home group, not YPG, but the other meeting that's here, the women's meeting. I joined a women's home group, which I know of like a lot of other women. Like, I, you know, I didn't have a lot of women friends. I mostly hung out with guys, and I was really uncomfortable around women, and my sponsor suggested I make this my home group, and I did, and I started, like, making friends with the women, and it was just so cool, and making friends with the women I was in treatment with, and, you know, doing the deal, I guess. And I was taking suggestions. I stayed in treatment for a long time, like 3 months, and then I went to a halfway house, because that was suggested, and I lived there, and I did, I started going to meetings, like, every day, like, on my own. I got a job at Denny's, and I didn't have a car, and it was the Denny's over by Turning Point, and I lived off of Gandy, so I would, like, wake up super early to ride my bike to get on the bus, and it was really cool, because I would always, like, leave my bike at this one gas station. And I would leave it there sometimes, because sometimes someone would pick me up from work and I would come back. Or I would take a different bus route back to where I didn't need to bike home. So I'd just leave my bike there. And, like, one day I came and there was, like, this note on my bike that was like, you need to remove this bike from our property within 5 days or we're going to throw it away. But I don't, it just taught me, because I didn't have a car when I was drinking either, but there's something about, like, I would always ride the bus everywhere. Like, I didn't care about riding the bus. But there's something about riding the bus sober that's definitely different from riding the bus drunk. And it's just like, you know, you're looking around and you're just like, no offense to anyone that rides a bus. I mean, but you just look around and you're just like, God, what? Like, I need to get a car. I need to do I need to do good so I can get a car. But that's, I mean, clearly that's not a good reason to want to stay sober, but that is what I thought at the time. But, so I just kept doing the deal, and I started going through my steps, and with my sponsor, I met the sponsor I have now. I met her at the halfway house that I was living at, and she became my sponsor after she moved out, and so we started going through the steps, and early sobriety was just so uncomfortable. Like, I just couldn't even talk to people. I was so awkward, like a lot of people. It was so hard. It was so, so hard, and there were so many days where I just, like, didn't want to come to meetings because I didn't know what I was going to say to people, you know, and I just couldn't get out of my own head, and I was just so wrapped up in myself and what was going on with me. And it wasn't really until I started forming like real relationships with other people where I could, like, you know, call them and ask them how they were doing that I started to feel better myself. And that has always, you know, been one of the huge things. And what they, you know, say is get out of yourself, go do something for somebody else. And that, it's like, well, how's that going to fix my problem? That's what I would always think. But it does. It just, everything always ends up working out when you do that, or when I do that, and it's wonderful. So, I don't really know where I'm at right now, but I'm just going to keep talking. And so I went through the steps, and I started sponsoring other women, and that's definitely been one of the most amazing things ever, because it just is. It's just amazing, and people who sponsor other people know that, to just be able to watch somebody else get it, you know, watch somebody else like grow up and be happy. And it's just been really fun to do that. And, you know, the first year I went to a meeting every single day, sometimes twice. I was in IOP for like 10 months at the Center for Women, and I just kept myself real busy. I was like, I couldn't really sit on the couch ever. Like, I think I watched TV one time at the couch on the halfway house, because like as soon as I sat down I was like going crazy in my mind. So I just try to stay really busy, and that's been like a gift of, you know, being sober for a little while longer now, is that I can sit on the couch and not go crazy. But in the beginning I couldn't. And I went back to school, I finished like my semester in school, and then I graduated, and so that was really cool. Graduated in sobriety, and my friends, we all had like this fun dinner at Miguel's. And anyways, so So life today, I guess. Life today, my sobriety, my recovery, it's definitely, it's like ebbs and flows, I guess, and I hear the same thing from other people, but the first year was really hard for me. I wanted to drink all the time. I was taking all the suggestions and everything, but I still had that, not the obsession, but definitely like wanting to drink a lot, thinking that I wanted to drink, just kind of like not wanting to deal with what I was dealing with. And then the second year was just like smooth sailing, I feel like. I just like was so happy all the time. And this past year and some has been like just a little more challenging. It's been more like how when I get complacent, life doesn't look so great anymore, I guess, and it's just crazy. It's like I had a problem in the beginning with thinking that, oh, I'm not an alcoholic, and it's just other substances that are my problem, you know. And then after I stick around in AA, and I'm able to, like, break through some of that, like, crazy denial about not being an alcoholic, I finally come to believe that I'm an alcoholic. And now it's like the longer I'm sober, the more I know I'm a freaking alcoholic, because this past, like, year, it's like it's like I look at people that are drinking, it's like I have the great obsession of every abnormal drinker is to one day control and enjoy his drinking. And that is so true, and that happens, like, that's only happened over the past year. Like, I'll look at people that are drinking out at a restaurant and be like, oh my God, that looks so nice. Like, why can't I just be like that? I know I'm not like that, but why can't I just be like that? And it's just crazy, and it's like this thing with getting complacent. Like, if I'm not, you know, it's like my ass isn't on fire anymore, you know, so I have to, like, really commit to AA and commit to doing the things that I say I'm going to do. I can't just, like, oh, I said I was going to go to that meeting, but I'm not going to go because, you know, I don't feel like I'm going to drink today, you know. And it's just been a battle, to be honest. But my life has gotten really, really good, and I have gotten, you know, I graduated, and I got a good job, and I'm getting married in like 9 months. So that's really crazy. And my life is just always full of wonderful people. I have wonderful friends and I have amazing relationships with every member of my family. And, you know, I just wake up today and I'm happy when I wake up and I'm grateful to, you know, be alive. And I'm not like dreading the day and, you know, just having like developed a relationship with God. Like most of the time, I really believe that like when I start to get stressed or worried or anxious about something, it's just like after like 20 thoughts or after like calling somebody, I just remember that like, okay, you know, everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to work out. It's like not up to me. You know, it's in God's control. It's not in my control. And that's just always such a relief. And it's just really a freeing thing to be able to live like that today and to not try to run my own life, because clearly when I try to run my own life, I just mess it up really bad. So I'm really grateful to AA and to everything AA's given me, and I am really grateful that Morgan asked me to speak. I really appreciate it, and thank you for letting me share.